Okay, next question. The grain in the Eleusinian Mysteries, E-L-E-U-S-I-N-I-A-N. Some people say it's ergot, ergot, E-R-G-O-T, the precursor
ergo.
To LSD.
Ergo.
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 Right. The people who would drink the hemlock or whatever it was they did when they engaged in the Eleusinian Mysteries and take this drink and start having visions or whatever, was the eicel or super sugar in that?
No, it was not. But now, version was, but it was not that. The version was simply a precursor. It would be like the K2 version of marijuana.
Right, and that's why it was made from grain, like our stuff is made from the barley sprouts. So there was some kind of grain source, similar source, but didn't.
But everything is a seed. Everything is a seed. So we're a little bit sideways on that.
Oh, okay. So it does not necessarily. So did they have an idea? Did they remember from their ascension unconscious that had crumbs to this idea of the super sugar, or they had no clue?
Just like the gingerbread house that Hansel and Gretel were trying to eat. Same thing. Same storyline. Same. Just like Hezekiah. Just like all of them. Just like the three bears. Just like all of it.
They were remembering the super sugar or the eicel or
yep.
both.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Both. So, but they didn't know how to make it. They just remember.
They still don't. They still don't.
All right. And that was cultures all over the world had that memory, had that attempt?
Everyone did. It's not an attempt. They all did it, Bob. That's the whole fun of it. And you hit it in plain sight over and over and over and over again. And then every time you play it over.
When you say they did it, they tried to find it. They didn't get to it. They did it. They attempted to get it, is what you're saying.
Well, we'd say they had it, but they wouldn't accept it, or they got it, but they didn't get it. We don't know the word. The word is silly, because how do you not get something you didn't get that you got, that you knew that you didn't know that you knew, that they told you that you knew, that you couldn't believe that you knew, because you can't believe that you knew that you knew that you know. If you knew that you know, how do you know that you knew? If you knew, then you know. You don't have to know you knew, because you knew you knew. If you knew you knew, then you don't have to anything else other than that. But then you turn around after a little bit and you just go to bed with a sore bum, because you can't figure out whether you've had engagement or you wanted to. You just hoped you did one day in a superfluous sweet by and by in the land that is fairer than day. You could come to some kind of laudable conclusion that might actually one day be meaningfully mean something, as it were. So it's simple.
Yeah. Did you say that I personally hid it from people in plain sight?
Always. You're the master of it.
And
you did it. You did it to Vern. You did it to Vern more than anybody.
And why was I doing that?
Because you think it's fun.
Okay, I was a prankster.
Yeah, well, that's not a prankster. That was you. It was deliberate intention.
And I was going to let it come forth when I was good and ready.
Well, you're still not sure yourself, so we would say yes.
Oh, you mean
I was sure? You were sure.
Yeah, I was suppressing it because I wasn't sure about the effect of having people.
You still are.
I'd lose authority. I'd lose authority.
You don't have authority. You want power.
Yeah, and so I would. I have power as long as that is frustrated and stopped from people's access.
Well, or so you maliciously think. We don't agree, but.
Yeah, I might think that. Now, does Carolyn think that way?
She does not.
All right.
Hers is a more esoteric generality of relief. It's always based on relief.
Right.
Either hers or someone else's. Sometimes she'll come up with the answer to cancer just so she doesn't listen to all those whining, crying cancer survivors. They are quite ridiculous, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So next question. So I read this article by William Irwin Thompson. It's a statement he made maybe in 1997. It's his farewell address to the Lindisfarne group. He quit leading it. So he says, just a second. He says, now, Now, there is no question but that Luigi and Tim's work in Zurich and Montreal is at the leading edge of medicine. And in his work in discovering and naming this family of proteins he calls netrins, N-E-T-R-I-N-S, Tim and his colleagues may have come upon ways to bind up severed neurons, cure Parkinson's disease, or understand the origins of schizophrenia in the ecologies of the interneurons. Did this Tim, let's see if we get his name. Did Tim come do some? Is that real? I mean, did Tim accomplish this? Tim Kennedy.
No, he did not.
That's his theory about what he thinks he's doing, and they're nowhere near what we're doing. Or he is near, but he's got the wrong classification. What do you say there?
Neither apply.
It's probably a million miles. Tim Kennedy probably wouldn't even agree with Thompson's description of Tim Kennedy's work.
Correct. That's exactly correct.
Right.
That's correct. It's like trying to convince Lyndon LaRouche that LaRouche is right. It's hard to do that.
Right. Okay, so... And then the other guy, Luigi's work, may show us just how to deliver medicines exactly to the place they are needed. Let's see.
When you've been trying, that transdermal ridiculous, people have been trying to do that. It's just a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. Now we want to get you to a world where there's no medicine. A world without medicine. Look, no one could kill medicine anymore. How wonderful. No one would die from medicine anymore. What a great day.
Yeah, Luigi Luisi, L-U-I-S-I. Nobody can kill medicine anymore because it is dead? Is that what you're saying?
To not die from medicine would be a great day.
Right. I don't have the details of what he does unless I go like this. I'm just looking at the claims that William Rowan Thompson makes for his colleagues in the Lindisfarne, these scientists. So we've done two of them. Let's see this next one. Okay, come on, where is it? He says, John Todd's work with living machines, that's what it's called, living machines. It says, as axons, synapses, interneurons, and chaperones can constellate a chemical ecosystem, so do John's cascade of organisms in a directional stream from anaerobic bacteria to snails to plants constellate an ecosystem of pollution eaters. John puts the yogurt back into the guts of our body politics so that our settlements can digest all the nasty stuff we surround ourselves with. And then it goes on. He started off 30 years ago. He'd fill up mason jars and set them out in the sun on the front lawn of his home in Falmouth. Sounds like the cell, Carol. He looked like he was canning green jellies, and he was. And this led to something that can eat up pollution. John takes various ingredients from around the world, brings them together, cyanobacteria and snails and sludge, and then he watches and waits. Kibitzing from the sidelines, I've been telling – oh, forget that. Is John Todd got something useful going on with fighting pollution with his living machines?
What's wrong with pollution?
Right. We don't even have a problem with that. So –
well, it's ridiculous now that you're saying, so the subculture says that if I can just get rid of this, 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 and this, I can have that, 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 and that. And we go, wait a second, that's a false premise right from your beginning. So it's like, wait a second, you can't get there from here. So the birds and the bees might be the bees' knees, but until you find out that you don't require either, neither apply. Neither apply. How cool
right,
is
that? And what you just described is our approach.
Well, we don't have any problem. There is no pollution.
Okay.
There's only little men. Your only problem on this planet right now is little men. If you could get rid of little man-itis, you wouldn't have any of those other problems. But the cares of life would go strangely dim. You would be hard-pressed to notice any of this ridiculousnesses that you find so compromisingly inappropriate. Great fun.
Right. So Thompson's claims for his fellow colleagues in the Lindisfarne conference.
Too clever by half.
Right. Is there something that any of his colleagues, like Lynn Margulis, discovered about bacteria that's useful? Anything?
Nope.
All right. And no other scientists have either in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we, Bob and I, just don't have much more patience for someone who stays stuck and rigid. And we're finding out with many, many, many people that they'd rather be right and rigid.
Than happy. Mm-hmm.
Than happy, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's starting to really affect the meat sack, because, see, the meat sack is not rigid, you see. That's sort of the point. So then it becomes, uh-oh, and then you start recanting. It's the same thing that put him in his dungeon that he's in now. He is trapped in a dungeon, that a prison of his own making.
Okay, until Bob gets down here to go and to rewrite on page.
Hey, hold. I thought I was off.
Bob's up here.
We were just kind of waiting. We're like, he's going to blow a blood. He's going to blow a gasket. Let him go.
Okay, so, yeah, I was asking a question. No wonder I wasn't answering. He couldn't hear me. So
we can hear you. We just, it wasn't on your recording, and you know how empirically you run things.
Right. What I was asking, yeah, you said something about Worcester already knew something, already knew about us. What part of it? The negative part of us is perception, or something else about us?
No, he already said that you were going to be the one that made all these huge differences, that he related that was all going to be about you, which is what he said then.
Mm.
That'd be many years ago.
Almost in the awareness.
Right. And then we did it, and he was left out, and that's what pissed him off. Okay.
Well, it's not really... That's one way to say it. Okay, that's fine, but it's not even about that, because he stepped out of it. He didn't want in it. He doesn't want it to be about he anymore. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. So,
okay, so that's the Worcester part. Let's see. Okay, this is interesting about cancer.
Chromosome 14.
Don't need it no more.
All right.
You're all cancer. You're all cancer then, Bob. It's a great day.
Okay, Ken, let's go to our next...
Won't Reverend Stang be cross when he realizes that you got to ask cancer and you got to stand it all at the same time, and that's what it came from? How about a kick in the head? How about that for a kick in the head, Bob?
Oh,
he'll be mad because you beat him again with ask cancer. Ask cancer saved your life. Ask cancer saved my life, and I'm here to tell you all about it. All you others, pay cash.
Right. So is if I'm Sherlock Holmes, is Stang my Moriarty, and he's been dogging me for thousands of years as Ophanel Haybob?
Not so much.
Yeah.
He just got caught in the crossfire of the 20th century.
Well, he should have just laid down. It's an old CKLN thing anyway, so don't worry.
Oh, this is pretty good. This is the Thompson Quadrant. We all end up in the Thompson Quadrant, Ian once said. Well, let's see where that leads.
Burn.
What? Well, they're in the Thompson Quadrant.
And we understand, but look how that worked.
Now, you say everything ends up in the Thompson Quadrant. I think you said...
Sooner or later.
The Thompson Quadrant. Now, I had a reason the other night why Ian liked that. What was it about Ian that put Ian into the Thompson Quadrant? The astral plane, the fact that you're the astral plane and non-physical.
Perfect imperfection.
That's what the Thompson Quadrant is about?
It is. It's your quadrant.
Right, and McLuhan is not about that. LaRouche is not about that.
No, he obsolesces all that. He's the standard of what's wrong with that.
McLuhan is.
Yes.
Yeah, and what is LaRouche in relation to that?
Sad, very sad.
Sad. What is Croker in relation to that?
Divisive.
Divisive, that's right. What is Bob in relation to that?
Happy.
Ah, very good. That's good.
And sometimes deluded.
That's understood. So happy.
No smoke, only fire sometimes.
Right. I came up with this is an interesting pattern that completes my mind in an interesting way. Back in 1969-70, Cosmic Awareness talked about our tridosia, T-R-I-D-O-E-C-I-A, I think. Does that come from, that term come from Sanskrit? Is that an Indian-Hindu term, Ion?
No, it doesn't come from Sanskrit. It comes from Caesarea Philippi.
Caesarea Philippi, that's a person?
No, that's a place.
Oh, okay, and it's not in any particular religion scripture?
No, it is not.
Okay.
What comes from there, the...
The tridosia, the concept of the tridosia.
Okay.
Atmosphere. Okay, I've got to find this. That brought up another question. So in, I got it.
Air, fire.
Yeah. So the tridosia is air, fire, and water. And awareness cosmos would say, are you fire? It would tell you what you are. There was the ratio. It's not like a triangulation. You, Bill, are fire, air, water. Susie is air, water, fire. And Betty is water, fire, air. So this was a little conceptual classifying game that Cosmo Awareness did. Well, then they said water will drop off and it'll be replaced by Akasha. And Carolyn was the first one to have air, fire, Akasha. So I was reading this Thompson stuff last night, and Carol, I'm going to have to just take a second here and bring it up. Maybe I can say it. Okay, I can say it. So Thompson's saying, he's responding to an economist, and he said, first there was an economy based on solids. That would be gold and cash and hardware. Then it moved to the liquid phase, and now it is moving out of the liquid phase, the global economy, into an atmosphere, like just air, kind of a nothingness. So then I said, okay, if I put air of the tridosia with the solid phase, the electric environment of the first half of the 20th century, epitomized by radio, Joyce called it fire, that burnt up the solid economy. So you started to get into this ethereal effect. And that made money become obsolete, and it was no longer a private medium. Then we moved into the digital technology, and that's moving into liquid capital, which was the flows of the economy the last 30, 40 years. Then when we moved into post 9/11, the economy was floating on nothing, and this is what Thompson says, it raised itself up to the air or atmosphere level. So then that collapsed, the air collapsed, and that's us being on the air, being electrified in the digital media. That collapsed in 2008. And now we moved into the fourth phase, which is Akasha, or the intervention of Ion and Ion's cloud. You like that? So I took a pattern 40, 50 years ago and related to the economy. Again, that's a mental game pattern I came up with, Ion, but did you see the relevance there? We went from solid to liquid to air.
And then you got to go to ice. You got to go all the way to ice.
And that's what you're doing. You're creating.
You
got
to obsolete it. You have to obsolete it so you can retrieve it. And the only way you can tote it is in a form of ice.
Now, is that referring to Kurt Vonnegut's Ice Nine story?
No, it is not. Okay. Kurt Vonnegut.
You liked Kurt in the early years.
Well, we like Kurt Vonnegut, but we don't like Vonnegut.
Right. Okay, so...
We talk right.
So Thompson say we're going to air, the economy is air, an atmosphere of global polities, noetic polities, he says, that is what Ion calls the cloud. And they're talking about the cloud, that's air. And then we come into the ion cloud, which is ice. And you don't mean literally ice, do you?
No, we don't.
Okay.
But it's a solid version of your conversion.
Yes, and we are in the air phase with the Google and them calling it the cloud, but that's going to be removed. It's actually been removed, you said. We're in
that's
the
correct.
Ice phase. All right, Cal, can we go to the next? Thank you. I just wanted to do that pattern. But it nicely brought the Tradesia under sociological.
He did, and a metaphorical menagerie.
Yes, and deluded. Granted, it's a deluded.
Granted, that's right.
But Thompson is saying that. He's deluded first. So where are we at here?
We have to go back to this because we jumped into all that.
Okay. The sixth.
Yum.
Eighth, right. Yum. The sixth, seventh, and eighth rings of the angel diagram are these overlapping boomerang things. That's my term. See how they go under? Then it goes over. I meant the Escher effect. Do you see the intertwining like an M.C. Escher painting? That is showing us the movement factor. Is that
yep.
tachyon communication ion?
Yes, it is. With a quark.
The quark level. The quark. Okay. That, and then you say, that is the best use of tachyon you used all night, Bob. Then our question is this a description of how Bob lives ahead of himself tachyonically?
And well, we don't like the way you say it. Say that a different way. I mean, it's good words, but it doesn't apply to what you're saying. It's like the sky is blue, so therefore I'm red.
So we like the fact that showing us the movement factor is tachyon communication, which goes faster than the speed of thought or speed of light. That is the best use of tachyon. And then Bob, Ion told me that I get xenochrony because I live ahead of myself. So we're asking if that's a tachyonic phenomenon, and you're saying not so much.
Well,
no, he's just saying say it a different way.
Oh, say it a different way.
Yeah, it's because I am red because the sky is blue. We go, well, good, but that ain't really saying anything. You're not.
Okay.
The words you're trying to convey don't mean that what you're saying is the said.
Well, my experience of the synchronization with media events, even before I know it happens, then I have my experience, then I saw it was in the media. Does the fact of the tachyon moving at the speed of beyond the speed of light, a factor in making my xenochrony possible?
It can, but it doesn't because, and the reason it doesn't is because you won't allow it to fulfill. You bring it back before you get it. You bring it back before you get it because you don't want to win. You want to do it.
Right. And is that
you're not doing this to win. You're doing this to do it.
Okay, so Carolyn's relationship to Ofenel Hobab. Move it forward here. So these are the interesting personal kind of questions I ask in the middle of our business stuff. What do you think of that, eh? You like these questions I ask about myself? Okay, we will start the recording.
If I set things up as Hobab, did I include Carolyn in my setup?
You couldn't do it without her. You would have if you could have.
I would have.
He tried to do it without me, and he couldn't.
Well, what was Carolyn doing back then when I was Hobab? What was Carolyn?
Sieving the sands of the sea.
Was she any particular person in the Bible, or not that she has to be, but
lots of them.
What?
Lots of them.
Carolyn was a lot of the people in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Was she Mary Magdalene?
Who knows? She was a slut. Carolyn's not a slut.
Carolyn's always been this high and mighty Illuminati bitch all this time. Eh? Okay.
Yeah, she's right up in there, but she's not stoic, but she can get you there.
Right. Okay, so where are we
next? Listen, right. He acts like he knows what he's talking about, Carolyn. Isn't that funny?
I know. He's
so
he's
funny.
Rushing. He's looking at the time. Oh, when I'm going to go. Oh, my gosh.
He's got to go. Oh, my gosh. There's one more question he's going to answer. So get him off quickly. Quickly,
okay,
Bob.
Here.
Bob. No,
what did he say?
He saved
to get
the
into that rant, Carolyn?
Save the day. Save the day again.
How do we get into that?
I don't know. You're wasting more time, though.
All right. The inhale. He said that to me 5,000 years ago.
Right. And you've done it. You followed the rule ever since.
The inhale is autonomic. It's automatic. It is not really involved, unless it is. Then why say it is autonomic? And Carolyn goes, yeah, I guess an inhaling is without thought, but an exhale is kind of without thought, too, but supposedly have more control over exhale. Isn't something was said last week about that? So our question was more on the difference between inhaling and exhaling.
Please.
The distance between ascended and non-ascended in your environment is the same distance in the amount of breath you can engage. And we're going to do that esoterically a different way. People, all the people now have COPD, BiPAP, CPAP, blah, 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 mist. They all have this crap because it's a breathing disorder. Everything is a breathing disorder because they can't breathe, and that's what it runs into. Time and time again, over and over again, because that's the reference that they're making it be about. It's the breath. You breathe, God breathes into you, so that's where you have knowing or flesh. That's where life begins, is in the breathing. So this is the play, the interplay that you're running into. That's why the breath becomes, the length in the breath becomes important about the conversation.
Okay, Karen, do you have a question about that?
And then the inhale is automatic, the exhale has some control. And the the inhale is when you get the angels doing your bidding as well.
Yes.
So that's the autonomic part, automatic.
Well, but see, you can drive the angels, but see, we also say that this is not a thinking man's game. You can think about autonomy to such a time or such a space that you even mess up an autonomic response. You can twist the knobs enough to where the automatic part won't come on anymore.
Right. Okay.
So, and we're not making a point of that. We're just saying to clear your words of what you're conveying so that Bob doesn't get on the radio and say something just god-awful ridiculous again that has to be cleaned up, although we like it when he does that. But he's a good antagonist sometimes. When you need a good protagonist, it's good. So an antiphonal choir always includes the bass and the treble. We say it's all about the bass and no treble.
Oh, that's fine. He's been explained, Karen. He's talking about bass versus treble when he says it's all about the bass.
Yeah. You never knew that?
No. Nope. I didn't know what bass
could be. Dr. Dean did. Dr. Dean did. That's why she's the sharpest machete in the shed.
All right. Where are we at, Karen? So that you figured that out, Karen, what he said.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep, and we're going to answer your one more good question.
So that may not be the good question. Elucidation of this, yours.
Let's go to our latest stuff, Carolyn.
Oh, that's going to take ages to find. Come on.
Well, just
what am I looking for?
The chart 23. Right, 23. Because I like sometimes often the latest stuff. The foundation stones. Remember we were asking about the foundation stones.
Bob, come on. This is all the mirror stuff.
Mirror. Let's start. I think we've never really done the mirror ion fully. And you have magnetism, polarity, duality, frequency, maybe a few other terms describing the distance between you and you, or the way matter is, the tuning fork and the super sugar, these qualities. Is that all encompassed in the mirror? Is the mirror swallow all that
no.
up?
No. It's not in the mirror. It's what the mirror, the reflection, the refracted light from the mirror is not the mirror. It's the distance between you and that experience.
Right, so refraction is something that gets in the way, and reflection is just simple reflection of light.
It's how you notice the rearview mirrored version of you.
We do that through refraction or reflection?
Reflected, refracted light. Well, we always have, because that's the only reason you have a mirror, so you can see what you saw that you see. See?
Right. So? Is refraction involved in mirror?
No, refraction has to do with light.
And our visual bias.
Look in the mirror in the dark and see what you see. You won't see anything. Dark.
That's a refracted phenomenon?
No, that's the lack of refraction because you can't pick up any light.
Oh, so when you engage, when you can see something, that involves refraction because you personally always distort the
light. You have to, but you got to refract it. But now you can do it in a very dim light. We're not fussing about that. We're not saying that.
Yeah.
But we're saying you got to have light to refract. Just
so
like
when,
you can't fuss at Carolyn if she can't hear something if there's no frequency that made a sound. Carolyn, you didn't hear that? No, there was no sound made. That's why I didn't hear it. Well, that's how you got to go. And sometimes that's the case. You're trying to hear things that aren't there.
Okay, so when they say in optics, when the image comes through your eye, our eyes inverts the image. Is that refraction?
No. That's reflection. That's reflection.
Okay, so when you say you have humans have visual bias, is that refracting?
It's why you can't read a newspaper in the mirror.
Well, the image flips. So then you
because it's dyslexic. It's in reverse.
I don't know what part of this visual phenomenon of light is refraction. Is it just simple distortion?
It's not a distortion. No, refract is what the light bounces off of to reflect.
Refract is what it bounces off of.
Yes, the refracted
Whereas
light
reflection,
bounced off
using
something.
Using that idea, what is reflection?
Reflection is the exact beam straight back to you. Like an inflection is a tonal representation of a sound. Same thing with reflection.
Good. Did you just say refraction is the tonal?
No, we said reflection.
Is the tonal thing. And refraction, it determines what the substance that light is bouncing off is the factor of refraction.
That's right.
And that creates a different situation each time.
It does. It does.
That's where the medium is the message. That involves reflection. Refraction.
Yes, it makes us very sad, but yes, it's good. Very happy days, and we will bid you happily adieu.
Thank you.
Hope you come back tomorrow.
Yay.
Okay.